So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
How did you think it sounded last week? Did you go back and listen?
I think
mine
it sounded good.
A little weird.
Yeah, I think I sounded too loud though.
Because I thought you sounded okay. I just thought mine was a little hollow.
It's because you had to boost mine up, so you got my mic picked up yours, so yours sounded more echoey. You understand? Because it's like having this mic on.
Oh yeah, I see. Well, ours right now they're like the same.
That's fine.
Okay,
that's fine.
I think we'll be okay.
Because I think I'd normally talk closer to the mic anyway. So and you talk louder, right? So it should work.
Even out. All right.
Yeah.
Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada, site of WrestleMania 9.
It's John Pollock and Wei Ting with another edition of Review Away. Today we are going to be reviewing WrestleMania 9, Wei, and it's the return of a guest today, Wei. We have a huge one. Bret Hart is going to join us later in the program.
What?
You and I went all the way to Calgary to get
Bret Hart.
Bret Hart on Review Away coming
my
up.
My favorite wrestler.
Well, we went all the way to Calgary to get Bret's reaction to his 1993 WrestleMania match with Yokozuna, Rodney Anoa'i.
We did. We traveled all the way out there and just for his reaction.
So later on, an exclusive here on Review Away, a portion of our interview with Bret Hart where he talks about not only Yokozuna, but his thoughts on Hulk Hogan. So that's all coming up later as everyone fast forwards now to find Bret. It's going to be hard to find.
We're very devoted to this podcast, as you can tell, and we put a lot of money into this particular episode of Review Away.
I will say, for most major matches involving Bret Hart that we review, we will probably have Bret Hart on this show because we asked him about a ton of matches in his career.
That's true.
We banked them. We banked them.
Yeah, well, you know, now would be a good time to promote the actual documentary we were working on, too.
Yeah, we actually, while we were out there for Review Away, we thought it'd be kind of cool to maybe talk to some other guys out there, and then we figured, hey, we could put together a documentary here
on Bret
Hart. So, basically, the Coles Notes version of it that myself, Wei Ting, and our another producer, George Barbosa, here at the Fight Network are all working on is a big documentary looking at the life and career of Bret Hart, culminating with his return this past January to World Wrestling Entertainment. It's going to be debuting the last week of March, and as soon as we know the exact day and time slot, we will be announcing it here. For our American listeners, it's going to be online, and you'll be able to watch it for free online, so don't feel that just because you don't have the Fight Network, you'll be left out in the cold. However, if you're in Canada, we would love for you to watch it on the Fight Network and subscribe. That would be an enhanced viewing.
Only $2.99 a month. And you get that beautiful ticker along the bottom. The only 24-hour combat sports ticker anywhere on
it's
any
like
channel.
CNN, but all fighting and wrestling-based.
Plus, you get CMLL and the best of Ultimate Classic Wrestling, starring John Pollock, where you get to see Steve Austin, Undertaker, Mick Foley, all way before their WWF days. All
right, I'm now at the point where I'm feeling a little dirty, so we're going to move on. Of course, you can always watch the weigh-in as well. His last guest was Martin Brodeur, the disgraced goalie that was benched by Team Canada for their big gold medal run.
Yeah, he did nothing.
Now we get into WrestleMania 9, Wei, our review, this one taking place April the 4th of 1993 from Las Vegas, Nevada at Caesar's Palace. The opening video, I wrote down here, Vince McMahon is awesome and should open every single major event.
What did he say? I don't remember. Oh, yeah.
Caesar's Palace.
Are you going to play it?
Las Vegas. Yes, I am.
Oh, you already did play it off the top.
Yeah, you're not good on those ones.
I missed it, sorry.
I love this opening. This WrestleMania for me was so nostalgic because this was when I first really... I became a fan, I guess, like 92-ish. Mm-hmm. And just the lead up to this event...
Yeah.
I remember all these angles so well, and I haven't watched this show in years.
This was my first WrestleMania, too.
The first WrestleMania, I started watching like a few weeks before WrestleMania 8, mm-hmm. and I just assumed this big show was going to be on like the channel that Superstars was on, or like on a television station, and that Sunday, it was like a 4 p.m. or something. They started them in the afternoon back then.
Mm-hmm.
You could not find a more sad child than me, knowing that WrestleMania 8 was not on, and I could not find it.
You didn't understand the concept of pay-per-views.
Yeah, but I did understand the concept of finding the channel and having the audio. Because you could hear the audio.
Like scrambled porn.
The scrambled. And I put it on, and me and my brother listened to WrestleMania 8. And we were so disappointed. And you would think after that, that like my parents would have felt so terrible for us. They did not get us pay-per-view after that. I didn't get pay-per-view probably till like 99, something like that.
Wow.
So I never got to really watch pay-per-views when I was a kid.
Well, I got to watch this because this was the first year that we acquired a legal cable box.
Man, if we were friends, I would have been your best friend.
Yeah, you should have come over. But yeah, I was so excited. I remember just waking up on that Sunday and thinking, wow, this is the day. This is the day that I have been promoted to be excited for. Yeah, and then all I did was just go behind the TV, flick that little switch, and I got to watch WrestleMania.
That's how easy it was for you.
It was.
Wow. Completely different paths you and I traveled down in our wrestling fandom.
Yeah.
So here it is, WrestleMania 9. We've got, it's the largest toga party in history, Wei, where we first are introduced to Gorilla Monsoon, who I guess is the host of the evening, not calling the event.
Mm-hmm.
And then they introduce Jim Ross, who's making his debut for the World Wrestling Federation on this event, in a toga, as has been always referred back to, Jim Ross in a toga. That's how they treated him on his first night in. They've always brought that up as like this source of humiliation. Really?
Dude,
wearing a toga?
Yeah.
Is that a big deal?
The guy is commentating WrestleMania. His first big show. He gets to commentate the biggest show of the year. Come on, how is this any sort of humiliation?
If anyone got it worse, it was not Howard Finkel, but no, they had renamed him Finkus Maximus during the day.
I thought that was so weird. I don't think I knew his real name at the time, and I just thought, wow, what an odd name for a man.
Why'd they get Maximus? Like, from Howard?
I really don't know.
Finkus Maximus introduces Julius Caesar and Cleopatra, who rode in on top of the Big Show to the ring. And then we saw the elephant here do a high spot as it comes down the ring, where it jumped up in the air. And my God, could this have gone wrong?
Yeah. Bobby Heenan could have died from the elephant stunt.
The elephant could have fallen on children.
Well, but these are professional elephants. These are trained Las Vegas elephants.
Yeah, so was The Undertaker's ring entrance a few weeks ago. Those were trained professionals, and look what happened. Imagine an elephant landed on a child in the opening match. You'd have to cancel the show.
No, they
would have still gone on.
Yeah, yeah.
These were hard times for the company. They needed this show.
16,000 fans packed into Caesar's Palace, and from what I know about the outdoor venue, they since torn it down.
They then introduced the announcers for the show. We've got Jim Ross already doing play-by-play, and Ross actually gives us a history lesson that there were 7 different Cleopatras in history, and then we had Randy Savage come out on a sedan, and he was accompanied by the Vestal Virgins.
Yeah. The Vestal Virgins.
I actually did some research on the Vestal Virgins on Wikipedia, and they were, as they mentioned on the show here, pure in body and pure of thought.
Nice.
As they came down with Randy Savage.
Nice.
Then Bobby Heenan comes out backwards on a donkey, and that brings our commentary team out, who all got entrances. Jim Ross, Randy Savage, and Bobby Heenan. I hated Randy Savage on this show.
Yeah, he...
I don't recall him being so terrible, but my God, he was incoherent, and it was painful over the next 3 hours, where sometimes he would just interrupt a discussion that was going on with just random catchphrases, or he'd put these weird rhymes in.
He seemed stoned out of his mind.
They put this huge animal underneath me! They got me facing the wrong way! That's an attack camel! Media 9! Go for it, lock and load, do the thing, if you got the guts, oh yeah! They're blast from the past, the Roman Colosseum, everybody get ready, this is only the start, let's have a great time, party time!
His like, you know how some announcers have their go-to phrase, if they're kind of lost? Well, he wouldn't be lost in anything, he would just interject with, so-and-so, doing the thing! WrestleMania.
And the other two would pause for him to just finish.
It was
the
like
sentence.
they had to step aside. Here, Jim Ross and Bobby Heenan, two of the best commentators in history, letting this idiot go wild for 3 hours on pay-per-view. Could there not have been better use of Randy Savage at a time when business was in the toilet than putting him on the cans for 3 hours?
Why did he? Why did they put him in the commentary booth at this time?
As amazing as this was 1993. Mm-hmm. Vince felt that Randy Savage's best days were behind him and didn't want him in the ring anymore and moved him over to commentary in 1993.
Mm.
Amazing.
It's ridiculous.
We go into our first match of the afternoon, not evening. Mm-hmm. Shawn Michaels defending the Intercontinental Championship.
Hold on, John. When you think about it, it's it would be 6 o'clock, right? It would be 6 o'clock Vegas time.
Was this an afternoon show, though? Or was this... I can't... Because remember, as I was saying, I know WrestleMania 8. It started like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, did it really?
So I don't know this one. Okay. I don't know the start times back here in 1993. If anyone recalls, please let us know.
Yeah.
But we'll say in the afternoon. It looked to be, you know...
It looked really bright.
3 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe in Vegas. Mm. It very well may have been 7 o'clock our time, and that would have been 4 o'clock in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well,
it gets a little overcast later. We'll analyze the weather changes afterwards. Shawn Michaels defending the Intercontinental Championship against Tatanka. And this also featured the debut of Luna Vachon in the corner of Shawn Michaels. And Ross asks, what is that behind Shawn Michaels?
Yeah.
That was Luna's introduction. And Heenan gives us her background and says that last year she won Miss Ontario. And you see, I'll often watch these while I'm on my laptop. Mm-hmm. And when facts like that come up, I'm going to do some research.
Mm-hmm.
There is no evidence of her ever competing in Miss Ontario. In fact, Miss Ontario wasn't even an event until a couple of years ago.
What is Miss Ontario?
Well, it's, you know, the women models from the province of Ontario that would go on to be Miss Canada.
She's not from
Miss Universe Canada.
She's not from Ontario.
No.
So why would she be competing in Miss Ontario?
Well, maybe she was like in Gatineau or somewhere, like right on the border between like Ottawa and
that's still Quebec,
Montreal. No,
Gatineau.
Isn't Gatineau like right on the border?
I've always thought it was Gatineau, Quebec.
All right. Well, there's some border cities there that maybe she's from.
Hull, Quebec is on the border.
Oh, because you can have Hull, Ontario, or Hull, Quebec. Maybe she was from Hull.
Hull, Ontario. Who cares?
Sensational Sherry makes her return to the company as she returns and is at ringside. If you remember, there was an angle where Shawn Michaels had Sherry go through a mirror.
Yeah, Marty Jannetty came back, and then Shawn Michaels went to hit Marty with the mirror, and then instead Marty moved out of the way, and Sherry got the mirror. I remember watching that on CH, and it was such a brutal thing they had to cut away.
Sherry legitimately got glass in her eye from that angle.
Really?
Yeah, she actually had to miss a bit more time than necessary at the time.
Shawn Michaels could not look more disinterested in Luna Vachon. He didn't even really
look... It was such an odd disconnect.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't even be paired together for more than a half hour.
Yeah, he didn't even make eye contact with her the entire time. Just did not acknowledge her.
Sorry, Shawn, we're putting you with Luna. Great. Really fits my image here. Yeah. Racial comments during the match towards Native people by Bobby Heenan, who referred to Tatanka as Tatatatatanka.
It's not racial.
It's very much.
Why is that fun of a
Native origin?
What
Tatanka? That name was given to him.
That's
from
just
his
making
ancestors.
Fun of a name. You can.
You're making fun of a creed.
Just because his name happens to be. What if I make fun of John? What if I say John?
I don't think it has the historical significance
of Tatanka. Okay.
I'm just saying, way. I found it.
All right, well, he's racist, yes.
I wrote in to complain about this.
Just one instance of racism. More to come. More instances of racism to come on this broadcast.
Yes. But no Nick Diaz on this.
No Nick Diaz.
Disgusting. Michaels, I noted in this match, this was all him, I found, in this match. He The comparison I made was he was like a pinball machine here for Tatanka. I thought Tatanka was terrible in this match. Mm. He worked the left shoulder of Michaels, mm. and they brought up it was an injury angle from a six-man tag on Raw prior to the event. Oh, okay. Then Heenan refers to Tatanka's chief running chicken.
Oh, okay.
Defend that one. chief running chicken.
I can't defend that one. That is...
At some point, Savage yeah. noted... My record's not clean. I never said it was. And I just wrote, Tatanka is so awkward in the ring with anything that involves leaving his feet. But the whole audience, they were into the near falls at the end. And Savage, the best line of this whole event was, if this is any indication of what WrestleMania is going to be like, my voice is going to go out soon. I was crossing my fingers at this point that his voice would be gone.
Yeah.
Michaels hits the ref outside the ring. Tatanka attempts to pin Michaels, but the match is called as Tatanka, I had assumed here, had been disqualified after Michaels had hit the referee, but no, Tatanka won by a countout.
Yeah, this was retarded, this finish. Okay, so, yes, Michaels, as you said, attacks the referee, comes back in, and then we discover that he's counted out. But I actually rewound the tape, and I counted. The spot was Michaels and Tatanka were brawling on the outside, and then Michaels went up on the apron to do a dive off the apron, but he would miss, and Tatanka would climb back into the ring while Michaels would be counted out. But Michaels, when he went back up onto the apron, he actually stepped back into the ring, which should break the count for him. Then, after he jumped off the apron, he did not even last outside more than 10 seconds, not more than 10 counts. If anything, Tatanka stayed outside longer than Shawn Michaels. So this is a bullshit finish.
On the biggest show of the year. This, I don't think, would be regarded. I know Michaels always refers to himself as Mr. WrestleMania. I don't know if this was necessarily an indication of that future.
No.
After the match, Luna attacked Sherry, and then Tatanka helped Sherry to the back. So that was pretty much the backdrop of this match, was Luna attacking Sherry for a feud that never materialized.
Yeah.
Backstage, Mean Gene Okerlund, who also looked ridiculous in his toga outfit. He was wearing leaves.
I don't mind the togas. I really don't. They give a feel, a seasonal feel to the whole show.
Okay, great. Gene Okerlund is backstage with the Steiner brothers, and hearing Scott cutting a straight babyface promo was awesome.
He was actually somewhat coherent at this time.
And he wasn't yelling about chicks or
freaks
or booty. He was just being Scott Steiner, American Babyface, in 1993.
Yeah.
And then Rick cut a promo without facing the camera, and it was hard to understand. Scott was like the level-headed one of the two at this point.
I wrote down, the Steiners were wearing their tie-dye, neon tie-dye and checkered tights at this time, and I actually own a Rick Steiner action figure with him in this outfit.
Really?
Yeah, with him in this tie-dye, this neon. where he does the clothesline if you pull him back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That brings us to our next match, the Head Shrinkers. The Head Shrinkers against the Steiner brothers. Everyone's offended in this. The Head Shrinkers.
Well, they went along with it. Why would they go along with it?
Anyway. The Steiners had, like, pep rally music at this point in time.
I thought it was the Michigan theme. Wasn't it the University of Michigan theme?
Was it? Oh, it sounded like a high school pep rally. I would hear this on Saved by the Bell or something.
Okay.
There was a sign that said, New York City loves the Steiner brothers, ... and The Undertaker.
So?
It was amusing. Fatu and Samu, complete with their bamboo sticks, entered the ring. This was the first time I think Ross ever used the term slobber knocker.
That's right. You mean in his career or in his WWF career?
Well, at least in his WWF career. Yeah. I don't know if in UWF or WCW he dropped the slobber knocker, but he explained what a slobber knocker was in his first night in.
And then Heenan proceeds to make a dirty joke about slobber knockers.
What did he say?
I forget what he said, but something. He said, aren't slobber knockers what you pick up from the hotel lobby or hotel bar at night or something? I don't know.
Oh, he prostituted the term. We saw a double leg takedown and Scott move into side control early in the match. Did you note who the referee was in this?
I didn't pay attention. Who was it?
Bill Alfonso.
Really? No, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a referee.
He was a former manager in both the NWA and WWF. He refereed a few matches on this card.
Wow, I didn't notice.
Bill Alfonso.
That's pretty amazing.
Jim Ross informs us that Sherry has been attacked by Luna at the first aid station backstage. I love that they have a first aid station at a pro wrestling event. That's it's wise thinking. I thought they ran away from regulation, but in fact they were running towards it at this point. Samu dropped Scott throat first on the top rope. Scott fell over the top, and this was a nasty spot.
Yeah, it was. It looked great, but I don't know if he was okay. Hopefully, I think he was.
I found this match kind of dragged near the end. Scott hit a Frankensteiner onto Fatu for the win, and Fatu really had to save this move because Scott could get up there, but he had no timing when it came to timing it with the opponent taking the move, and it was really the impetus was on the receiver rather than the distributor.
To just do a bump roll.
Yeah, catch the legs and then do the forward roll.
Yeah.
And the Steiners get the win in their one and only WrestleMania match.
Yes, that's it.
Then we go a plug for the WrestleMania Hotline way, where they showed Raymond Rougeau interviewing a very irate Tatanka, and they noted that the WrestleMania Hotline only available in the U.S. Fuck the world.
Well, it would be more expensive to do that.
Wouldn't it be more
lucrative?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe didn't you want to hear what Tatanka was saying?
No, I wouldn't. I wasn't gonna even pay for this pay per view. Why would I pay whatever $5.99 a minute to talk to Tatanka?
Sorry, you got to flip a switch. I had to watch bars. Gene Okerlund is with Doink the Clown, and
did you really like just gather in front of the TV for 3 hours with your brother?
No, I wasn't like sitting watching it, but it was playing
in the background.
In the background, and you could hear it perfectly. Like there was no interruption or anything. It just he was like listening. It would be no different. They plugged it later of WWF radio or whatever. It would be no different
true.
Than that.
That's true.
It was like the radio was on.
Most teenagers would have memories of you know flipping on pornography, but for John Pollock
at the age of 8, you were watching porn at 8.
Oh, I said teenagers. But I don't know how you were doing this until 1999, right? I was not watching porn at eight years old.
No, I wasn't using this practice for too long because it got a little tiresome not seeing pay-per-views.
Okay.
Thank God for the internet. You can bootleg everything now.
Yeah. Tons of porn on the internet now.
We continue here with Gene Okerlund with Doink the Clown, who desecrated the visage of Julius Caesar, according to Gene Okerlund. And then they discuss the tricks that Doink has been playing on children. And they go back, and do you remember this angle, Way, when Doink attacked Crush? At a Superstars taping with the fake arm. I totally remember this angle.
I do. Wasn't he throwing confetti? Like his gimmick was that he would.
He used
toss
to always
confetti.
Be at like ringside in the crowd.
Yeah.
For weeks and weeks he'd be there, and then
he had like a bucket of confetti, and then he teased tossing the bucket of confetti onto Crush, and it turned out to be a bucket of water.
Yes.
And he soaked Crush.
And then eventually Doink gave a flower to Crush. And when Crush turned to give the flower to a fan, he pulled his arm out, and it was a fake arm, and it was like metal or whatever, and he just beat the fuck out of Crush and knocked him out cold.
With the fake arm.
And the way they sold this, it was great. It was great. And it built up to this big match at WrestleMania.
I thought Doink was an awesome character. He was so scary.
He was. His music was creepy.
Yeah, and just the evil laugh and the sudden change in facial expression, I thought it was really good.
He tells Okerlund that after WrestleMania, Crush may be seeing double vision.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Oh, foreshadowing.
We go to another sign at ringside where it shows Doink and a van sign. Who's the pineapple head now?
I don't get it.
Who's the pineapple head now? I would have made that sign, wouldn't you?
No.
These signs are terrible.
They're giving out...
Crush's ring attire. Do you want to comment on his ring attire?
Well, Crush at this time, he was wearing...
this was right out of American Gladiators.
Yeah, he was wearing a orange, purple, and yellow...
Spandex.
Spandex with his
spandex
Crush...
Spandex shorts.
With his Crush logo on it. So,
how could you buy a guy's name being Crush?
Well, he was Crush in Demolition.
Every time I saw this guy, I thought of the soft drink.
Because he was wearing orange.
He was wearing. Yeah, he was He was like Kool-Aid had the Kool-Aid guy. Crush could have had Bryan Adams.
Yeah, he should have been selling the drink. That would be perfect. The soft drink wrestler.
Yeah. if only we were booking in 93.
I loved his finisher, though. He would crush an opponent's head.
Yeah.
It would be like a vice. Vice the opponent's head.
He'd just crush his head.
And I would legitimately believe that this was a real
move.
That
was in, when I had Sega Genesis, that was my favorite finish to do in the Royal Rumble video game. You'd have to get behind your opponent.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to press like A and B together or something, and then you'd just crush his head. Then you'd lift him up into the ground and smash him down, crushing his head.
That's amazing.
Just killed his power bar.
That move should be illegal. They should ban that move.
You could do that in MMA.
Can
you crush a guy's head? But why would you? If a guy's throat was open, why wouldn't you go for a choke?
It
would be a statement.
Yeah, it would be. Like, if you actually wanted the guy to die, you could try to crush his head.
Horrible.
But, I don't know. Crush is a very violent person, I guess.
Crowd was dead for this match.
Mm-hmm.
Silence. There was a ref bump late in the match, and by late, I mean like 7 minutes in. And then Crush, this was WrestleMania. This was the night to put it all out there. This is what it's all about, Wei.
Yeah.
Spinning Liger kick by Crush. Horrible failure here.
Well, I didn't even see that.
You didn't even note it? Oh, God, it was bad. A second doink comes out from under the ring, and they attack Crush with the arm, and he hits him multiple times in the head, and Doink defeats Crush. And Savage, just outraged, yells, "That's not a match, that's cheating."
Well, it is.
It was.
Huh.
And Doink gets the win. Now, in the continuing the theme of offensive comments, Wei, I want to get your reaction to Todd Pettengill in the stands with the Japanese photographers. And he was inquiring if there were two Doinks. The first one couldn't understand English, and the other one just laughed ridiculously.
We're here with the photographers from Japan. Sir, were there two doinks in your opinion, or was it an illusion?
Doink.
No, sir. Were there two doinks? Sir, were there two doinks? All right, how are you enjoying your stay here in the U.S.?
Las Vegas, number one.
Hey, Yokozuna.
Yokozuna, number one.
Unbelievable.
I thought it was terrible. I think it sends a message that if you don't speak English, you're a retard.
Horrible values put forth here in 1993.
Well, it's true to this day, is it not, in the WWF?
Do you still find that?
Name one non-English-speaking wrestler that is portrayed in a positive, intelligent light.
Delirious. Ring of Honor.
That's Ring of Honor.
In WWE? Jimmy Snuka?
He speaks English, but he's not portrayed as an intelligent person whatsoever.
Wait, I want to think about this. Non-intelligent speakers that are portrayed in a positive light. Eugene was a few years ago.
No. I meant non-English speaking wrestlers that are intelligent.
Okay, that don't speak English. There has to be one. Eddie Guerrero was.
Come on. You're not following the rules.
He didn't speak English all the time.
He speaks English.
He would end his promos by saying something in Spanish.
He's an English speaker. Bottom line, it's understandable. You have to be able to cut a promo.
Funaki.
He is the biggest idiot of all. Kung Fu Naki?
Didn't you buy a Kai and Tai shirt?
I bought a Kai and Tai shirt because I thought it was so stupid.
You're supporting it.
Because they're giving.
You're supporting these stereotypes. You're just building up pillars.
Their gimmick
for
was
future
so,
generations.
Their gimmick was so stupid. I just had to buy one of those shirts.
Do you still have it?
I still have it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Next match, Wei.
Indeed.
Razor Ramon against Bob Backlund. This match was horrible, okay? And I'm going to explain why. Razor Ramon starts the match with chants for himself from the audience. He was the heel at this point, and Bob Backlund was the All-American babyface. And apparently someone thought it was a great idea for the babyface Bob Backlund to come to the ring with no theme music.
Yeah.
Huge babyface move. Savage brings up an angle from earlier in the day at the WrestleMania brunch where Brett was knocked out cold by Lex Luger, which we'll chat about later. Razor Ramon, he uses a small package for the win, and Backlund is upset after the match. It was like they were both booked the opposite of what they were. Ramon was booked as a babyface in this match. It was a squash match on WrestleMania, and Backlund came across as the heel in this, yet was not turning heel.
Yeah, I almost thought that Backlund here was almost... The way they booked him here, it almost seemed like they were planting the seeds for a heel turn.
Well, he didn't turn heel for another year and a half.
Which is odd, because just looking at him here, he's just so out of place and plays an extremely chipper good guy. Like, way too happy and
and it's like stupid. That he chose the word chipper.
And stupid for his own good. And you could just tell that within this really happy man, there lies a very evil and psychotic person. And Razor, at the time, he was getting cheers, too. So I don't know what they were thinking. Maybe this was just extremely, extremely early booking, or maybe just nonsensical.
Mean Gene Okerlund is backstage with Money Incorporated, Ted DiBiase, and IRS, and they replay the angle where IRS smashes Brutus the Barber Beefcake's face with a briefcase while DiBiase holds Beefcake. And they also state that his partner for tonight, the returning Hulk Hogan, was attacked last night, and they were behind it. And this was actually a legitimate injury Hulk Hogan suffered right before WrestleMania. It was a sailing incident, and his whole left eye was just closed shut.
Mm-hmm. But there have also been rumors that the black eye was from Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yes.
Because Hogan was supposedly sleeping with Elizabeth.
Lots of rumors persist about what the cause of this was. The public story, yes, that it was a sailing incident, that Savage may have even been sailing with him. And then, yes.
Maybe sailing is like a, code for something else, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't. Money Incorporated versus Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake for the tag team titles. Hogan and Beefcake, you know who they defeated to become the number one contenders for this match?
Who?
No one. Early on, they tease a count-out finish, but they announce if Money Incorporated walks out, then they also lose the titles. I hate these stipulations, Way.
Yeah.
Where they change the rules right on the fly like that. There's a rule in place that you cannot lose the titles based on a count-out.
See, but
except when Hulk Hogan is the challenger.
No, but when people abuse these rules...
Well, that needs to be cleared ahead of time.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think it's stupid. I think for a title match, they should just say no countouts.
That would have been easier, but Money Incorporated for months had been doing this gimmick where they'd walk out and keep their titles, and then at WrestleMania, they got fucked by that rule. Savage, with another gem in this match, stating that they are hanging from the rafters. He pauses... If there were rafters. What an idiot. Hogan's put out by the $1 million dream. Beefcake then runs in and uses the sleeper on Ted DiBiase. So both Hogan and DiBiase are laying unconscious. Mm-hmm. Inside of the ring, they build up to a hot tag for Brutus Beefcake. Doesn't that seem a little reversed? Building to the hot tag for Beefcake?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yes.
And then DiBiase hits Beefcake with the briefcase from the floor. Money Incorporated takes the mask off of Beefcake and work on his face, his surgically repaired face.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby Heenan was just elated at the idea of Beefcake's face being rearranged. He was giddy during commentary here.
I was very concerned for Brutus Beefcake at the time. I thought he was really going to have... He just had a surgically repaired face. He was really going to waste all that time...
Parasailing.
Recuperating.
Hogan and Beefcake should just stay on land. Beefcake then recovers... With a sleeper on IRS, DiBiase then attacks Beefcake, and he knocks down both Beefcake and the referee. This allows Hogan to take out Money Incorporated with Beefcake's mask, and they get the double visionary pinfall, but the ref is outway. So Jimmy Hart runs in, reverses his jacket, which just happens to be black and white striped inside, and he counts three. Everyone's going crazy, but then they announce that since Beefcake was knocked into the referee, that the Mega Maniacs have been disqualified and Money Incorporated retain the Tag Team Championships.
Yeah, how stupid was it for Hogan and Beefcake to celebrate after their manager counts the pin?
They've been in this thing long enough. They should have been aware of the rules and regulations.
And they take it out on the ref. And
poor Danny Davis is thrown
out. Shit out of the ref.
Thrown out by Jimmy Hart. And then they celebrate by opening up the Halliburton. There's a brick inside and lots of money that they give out to the live crowd.
They should be arrested for that. They're stealing. They cheat, and they're stealing
heels.
This is the first year that Hogan hasn't main evented at WrestleMania.
Was it?
Oh, never mind.
Todd Pettengill's at ringside with Natalie Cole. Do you know who Natalie Cole is?
No, I do not.
She was the celebrity this year WrestleMania.
She sings some song, right? Their stock of celebrities really dropped at this WrestleMania.
Natalie Cole. Yeah. She's shocked that the WWE is giving away real money. So was I. And you could tell she had zero interest in being on camera here with Todd Pettengill.
Yeah.
She just wanted, okay, bye. Then they interviewed Dan Reichartz, the CEO of Caesar's Palace, who was just ecstatic that WrestleMania had come to Caesar's Palace.
Yeah.
And they would never return. Gene Okerlund is backstage with Mr. Perfect. And Perfect goes on and on bragging about what a great week he's had, how perfect he is, and then he botches this promo to a gigantic degree, calling him the Lexorcist. Lark gets confused, blows the promo, and just storms out. This was this is probably the worst promo of Kurt Hennig's career. Yeah. It was anything but perfect.
Yeah, I never liked Mr. Perfect as a face. I thought his character is best
suited
for
a heel.
And even Luger, it seemed like their roles were kind of reversed here. Luger should have been a face, and Mr. Perfect the heel, but nonetheless, they had a match.
The Narcissist, Lex Luger against Mr. Perfect. Luger comes out with women in thongs, and the fans are trying to touch them, and it was very awkward watching the women try to avoid these fans on the way to the ring with their mirrors. And they pose with the mirrors, and sparks came out of the mirrors. Why, this was pretty elaborate for 1993.
No, well, they I don't know.
During this match, Savage calls WrestleMania 9 the best ever. Of all time.
Sure.
Bigger than Pontiac, Michigan. Bigger than the Sky Dome. Bigger than the first one. WrestleMania 9, Caesar's Palace.
In his mind, that could, maybe it's for personal reasons. Maybe he...
Not the year he won his first world title.
Well, who knows?
Not the year he headlined with Hogan. Did
who
a
knows
giant
what
pirate. Happened?
Who knows what was going on backstage? Maybe
pulling a great match out of the Ultimate Warrior. No, it was sitting here... yelling, they're hanging from the rafters if there were rafters.
Maybe he was ecstatic after punching out Hogan. Maybe that's
maybe,
why this was
maybe.
The best.
Finally, Hogan at the cell.
Yeah.
Visually. Luger works on the lower back of Perfect to play up his past problems with his back. Jim Ross and Bobby Heenan. I thought the MVPs during this match, the crowd wasn't reacting to any of the near falls. They were not into this match. Luger uses a backslide to win the match, despite Perfect's feet being in the ropes, which indicates to me that Perfect was not willing to do a clean job to this idiot. And then after the match, Luger knocks out Perfect with his forearm, which had a metal plate inside of it, and Savage says that Luger should be put in jail. I agree. Perfect regains consciousness. He storms backstage, and then they see Perfect... He comes backstage, Luger's chatting with Shawn Michaels, who is wearing tight jeans and cowboy boots, and he attacks...
And no shirt.
No shirt. Why would you? And Luger gets attacked by Perfect. Shawn Michaels runs in, attacks Perfect, and just beat the fuck out of Perfect. Like, I mean, he dropped a garbage can on his cranium, like right on the forehead.
A garbage bin.
And then beat him up some more. And, these two would not wrestle until August of that year. This angle, this feud started in April, and Perfect and Michaels would not work together until SummerSlam.
Well, they didn't have a ton of pay-per-views at the time.
No, but it was just it was well-built, I thought, starting, WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Michaels going from Tatanka to dumping Luna and on to Mr. Perfect. Things were much better for Shawn Michaels after this event rather than during. Then they go back to ringside, and all of a sudden Bobby Heenan... and Randy Savage get into a huge argument where Randy Savage stands up and there's a giant pop from the crowd thinking that Randy Savage was going to attack Heenan, but this did not happen.
Did not happen.
And then we have Gorilla Monsoon, who had been forgotten about for this entire pay-per-view, previewing the next match between The Undertaker and Giant Gonzalez, as well as Bret Hart, against Yokozuna, our final two matches of this afternoon's event. And that takes us way to The Undertaker against Giant Gonzalez. The Undertaker going into this WrestleMania with a 2-0 record.
2-0 streak.
Would the streak be broken? Streak. That's what every fan was thinking. I thought The Undertaker got the second biggest pop thus far next to Hogan. Mm-hmm. He came out with a crow.
Yes, he did.
I wonder, this would have been before Brandon Lee died, right?
I'm really not sure.
I think it was 94 he died.
Are you saying that has anything to do?
Maybe it was
with
a tribute.
To Brandon Lee?
Yeah.
The dead man with the crow. Highly doubt it.
All right, you look it up. Bobby Heenan asks here, is he human? And I thought of the Killers song right away.
Wow.
You didn't think of that?
No, I did not. Any mention of the word human and hey, Brandon Lee died on March 31st, 1993.
He died, dude, 5 days before WrestleMania.
Wow. So maybe it was.
Don't fuck with me. Don't fuck with me. That's totally why.
No, it's not.
Oh, it is.
I still
it
don't
is.
Buy it. Just because he has
five
a crow?
5 days
so
before
what?
So? Filming the crow, Brandon Lee dies,
yeah.
And the dead man comes out with a crow.
Just
why a crow?
Because it fits his character. The
he's
crow
never come out with a crow
the
before.
Crow is the bird of death.
Five
he's
days,
the dead man.
5 days before WrestleMania, he dies. It was a tribute.
Doesn't matter. It's just a coincidence.
I'll call up Mark Calloway and ask him.
He won't tell you.
The opening portion of this match was all Undertaker selling in the opening minutes. Gonzalez on offense was terrible. Not that his selling was probably any better. This match was terrible.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Did you like it?
I didn't like it, but you know what? I wasn't too offended from it. I mean, it's interesting watching The Undertaker work against the big guy because he's traditionally the big guy in a match.
Why don't you explain how this match ended?
Well, Giant Gonzalez, Harvey Whippleman, Giant Gonzalez's manager, distracts the referee and then hands a chloroform-soaked towel to Giant Gonzalez. Giant Gonzalez then suffocates, or what is it? What do you do with the chloroform? It kills the Undertaker with the chloroform.
We're to believe the Undertaker is dead.
Makes him pass out, and the Undertaker actually passes out. Then the referee disqualifies Giant Gonzalez, but who cares, right? The whole point of this is to kill the Undertaker. So the EMTs come in, and everybody's all concerned about the Undertaker. And I just watching this portion of the show today, knowing what I know about pro wrestling, I just thought it was so cool to see all these people, all these EMTs, all these referees and sheriffs and all Las Vegas people, just to know that these are all actors and none of this is real. This is all bullshit. This is all just actors in on the act. As a child, I was legitimately concerned about The Undertaker. Now I know that these are all actors. I just thought that was actually pretty awesome. So The Undertaker is taken to a stretcher in the back. Giant Gonzalez is still in the ring, and then gong, you hear the Undertaker's music, and then the Undertaker walks back out. Amazingly, he's recovered from the chloroform,
and he's recovered enough that he delivers the worst flying clothesline I've ever seen in history to the Giant Gonzalez, and the Undertaker wins this match by disqualification. But wait, the war is not over between these two.
Well, what was to happen with these two?
Their feud would continue.
Oh, great.
They'd have another pay-per-view out of this.
Nice.
We throw to Gene Okerlund backstage, who says, "Thank you, Jimmy Ross." And he recaps Yokozuna delivering bonsai drops to both Jim Duggan and at the contract signing for Bret Hart. I remember all of these angles from watching them on TV. Hogan comes in for an interview, and he says that all the Hulkamaniacs and Hulk Hogan are in Bret Hart's corner. Hogan challenges the winner of the match and says,
"That's why right now, Bret Hart, I'm issuing a challenge to either you or the Jap, brother."
I couldn't believe it. I almost spat out my milk when I heard him say
this. Was the most racially offensive pay-per-view in WWE history.
I thought it was so funny just to hear Hogan say the Jap as if You know?
That's a babyface comment for him.
Just another word.
Just horrible.
Yeah. They made that Banzai drop look so serious.
Looked terrible, really, when you
look
back.
What do you mean? I think it's a very devastating move. Devastating looking maneuver. Yeah, sure. Giant, like, imagine like a giant couch being dropped on a person's chest.
I always thought it was in the selling that made it look really well.
You can see
the feet, though. Broken.
So? What? If he were to legitimately land on a person, he would still land feet first.
No, he could just be flat and land ass first.
But
right on the chest.
But then he would fall over. He would have to stabilize his fall first and then drop his weight onto the opponent.
I'm not saying it was a bad finish. Back now in hindsight.
I love that finisher. And when they did it with Duggan, they had Duggan cough up blood.
Well, that was the selling.
I thought it was tremendous.
Made it great.
Well, I think it's very, very cool. And I think they just booked Yokozuna very well up until this point.
Todd Pettengill is with some fans in the arena wearing togas. And then did you notice all his throws back to the announcers where he get all, like, weird?
Animated.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's trying to be goofy or funny. That's his thing.
Let's go back to my colleagues, Jim Ross, the Macho Man, Randy Savage, and Bobby the Brain.
As the music sounds, let's go back to the squared circle.
I hated Todd Pettengill. So just to recap here, we had Hogan challenge the winner here. So we have Brett involved in a match with Yokozuna. He shot an angle with Lex Luger earlier in the day where Lex Luger knocked him out.
At the brunch.
Which never went anywhere, if you remember. They did nothing with Luger and Brett.
Yeah.
And then...
Because they turned Luger.
And then they're setting up Hogan here for the winner. Just seemed like a lot. Main event, Bret Hart against Yokozuna for the WWF Championship. Another fan sign. Brett can beat Japan. Just him, alone.
Sure.
Could take Japan down, way.
Mm-hmm. Japs.
Early on in the match, Brett's on offense to start. Bumping and selling for Yokozuna. Brett worked very hard in this match. I like this match, to be honest. I remember the build-up for this match was so good in terms of Brett being so much smaller than Yokozuna, mm-hmm. and they would bring up, how can he possibly put the sharpshooter on this guy? He's giving up too much size. I bought into this match so much that when I finally saw it months later from the video store, mm-hmm. it was great.
Yeah,
it was like Brett was like, just everything he did in this match made sense of what you would do if you were facing a 500-pound man.
Yeah.
He ran at him right from the start, gave him a double drop kick. Mm-hmm. He was using he used the ropes to get him off of his feet.
Yeah.
Like, just stuff that, I'll clothesline him and knock him over. No, that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was that stuff that I always enjoyed about Bret Hart's matches, and I thought this was a rather entertaining match. Yoko exposed the turnbuckle, and he was knocked into it, and then that took him down to the ground where Hart was able to put the sharpshooter on with Yoko on his stomach, and Brett crossed Yoko's legs, lifted them up, and put him in the sharpshooter position. And this is when Mr. Fuji threw the powder into the eyes of Brett, and then Yoko got the pinfall, and your new winner is Yokozuna. Which, what was your reaction, Way, at the age of 8 when you saw Yokozuna win the title?
I was heartbroken. I thought...
Pardon the pun.
Yes. I thought, wow, he lost. He worked so hard for this, and now he lost because of some bullshit salt?
Hulk Hogan, sensing the opportunity, runs out to ringside to help Brett. And there's an incoherent promo by Mr. Fuji where he's calling him Yokozuma. And he challenges Hogan and calls him a yellow belly. And Brett, saying, don't worry about my blinded eyesight. Go to the ring. Take the match. Bring the title back. So Hogan gets into the ring. The title is apparently on the line. The bell never rings. The powder is used. And Yokozuna, for months away. Do you remember this angle of how it was so hard for him to get knocked off his feet? Hogan just walks into him with, like, not even a clothesline. It's like his two forearms, and just lazy, just hits him in the head. Yoko takes a bump for him onto his back.
He had salt in the eyes.
Why would that affect, like,
it affects
fine,
your balance.
Fine.
Brett, what I didn't understand was Brett was pinned off of the salt in the eyes. He was in the sharpshooter. Mr. Fuji threw the salt in his eyes, and then Brett didn't even take a punch or anything. He was just pinned off of salt. How does that make sense?
He was assaulted. Hulk Hogan delivers the leg drop to the blinded Yokozuna, and he pins him. Yokozuna's reign lasts a minute and a half. Hulk Hogan is your new champion to end the show with all the pyro and fireworks, and Savage ends by saying this was the best WrestleMania ever.
Bullshit. I remember thinking when Hogan came up, I thought Hogan was going to tell the referee what had happened and reverse the decision, not take the belt for himself.
No. So right now, let's go to our guest, Bret Hart. First comment, he's going to tell us about the match with Yoko and what he liked and did not like about the match.
The match I had with Yoko, where I lost the belt, was the best. If you go back and look at it, it was the best match he ever had. I don't care if anyone says it was the best match Yoko ever had. And the sad thing about that is that we had a whole sort of last 5 minutes of the match that we never even went into, and we never got to do it. Yoko got, I don't know, he got too tired or something, and he just jump-started the ending, and we went into the ending about 5 minutes premature and missed out. Like, he just decided to chop off the whole last 5 minutes of what we were going to do. And it still stands as a phenomenal match for Yoko and the drama and everything. But I know that if we just finished the 5 minutes, it would have been basically the same ending, about 5 minutes more story into it. I always said, and I never did it. I wrestled most times after that. I said, I never do those. That 5 minutes was gone forever. I said, I'll never. It's, you lost it. Because I was so mad at him. I wasn't mad about losing the title. I was mad about him screwing up the last 5 minutes of the match and going home on me. But I look back on that, it was as a bit of a masterpiece with Yoko.
Bret Hart going into this, he had held the title for about 6 months at this time, and Vince McMahon was going in a new direction with Bret, and then all of a sudden, they're going back to the past with Hulk Hogan, and the decision to put the title back on Hulk Hogan and put Bret Hart to the side.
And when they pulled the plug on me in WrestleMania 9, I knew when it happened, I said, wrestling's changed. It's about the dramas and the matches and stuff. And I was like, okay, Hulk Hogan's such a great wrestler. Let's see what kind of business he can draw. Let's see if, what kind of matches he's going to have. How is he going to do what I was doing? Like, I was more like, be my guest. You know, if you're the biggest superstar in the world of wrestling, you're going to draw better than me anyway. And that's good for everyone. That's good for me. It's good for the other wrestlers. And I'll take a step back for you. Be my guest. Business plummeted. Boom. The whole business, within a month, Vince was like, they just took the belt from him, put it on Yoko. They knew Hogan had I remember Vince telling me that Hogan's best days were over, and that he was more like, there's time to sort of turn him into a Babe Ruth, you know, character where he came back once in a while when he had the big match, maybe, but the days of him sort of working every night and being the star of the show was over.
So there were the thoughts of Bret Hart on WrestleMania 9 and the decision to put the title back onto Hulk Hogan, and he would only hold the title for a couple of months. Business did go down, and Yokozuna would get almost a year-long reign with that title the second time around.
Wow. Amazing.
So, wait. First of all, I want to get your thoughts on this pay-per-view and your ranking out of 10.
My thoughts on this pay-per-view were that I enjoyed the atmosphere of the pay-per-view. I liked the outdoor venue very much. I thought it was unique. This was a much smaller crowd than the previous WrestleMania. The previous WrestleMania had a crowd of something like 62,000. This only had about 16,000. But it was my first WrestleMania, so I think back on this quite fondly. The wrestling is shit. There are no good matches at all on this, except you can argue that the last match was
that's
decent.
About it. Yeah.
But everything else was pretty throwaway. But for me, though, it's not really about the match quality. I mean, when you're that young, you don't really... I personally did not care about match quality as much as I did care about the characters and the outcomes. And
you're judging this as a 25-year-old, not as an 8-year-old.
As a 25-year-old? Okay, well, I give this a 5 out of 10.
I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 10.
with a little thrown in there for nostalgia because of this event.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all. This was not a great WrestleMania at all. So we're going to go to some feedback right now before we set up next week's show. From Richard, he says, I really appreciate your response as to why you refused to review WrestleMania 20, and I respect your opinion. I see next week you are reviewing WrestleMania 9, and I just watched a stream of it, and I have my barf bag ready for that fiasco. Keep up the good work, folks. From Robert Otto, been loving Review Away. I listened to the first half of Law, then skipped to Review Away. I would love to hear a review of XPW Baptized in Blood, one or two. I miss such fan favorites as Homeless Jimmy. And we do have some XPWA that we can get to down the road.
Sure.
Ryan Gilbert writes in, can't wait to hear the review of WrestleMania 9. I recently had a drinking game with some friends watching that show. I couldn't stop laughing at various highlights like Randy Savage on commentary saying, Tatanka, doing the thing. Whenever he couldn't think of certain moves, Tatanka did during the match with Shawn Michaels. Sean Prasad, great review of UFC 2. It was pretty funny to see the comparisons from back then when pretty much everything was legal in the UFC. Also brought back a lot of memories. When I was younger, I would go to one of my cousin's houses to watch UFC illegally. Hope you guys do more old-school UFC events. Once in a while doesn't hurt. Andrew McMahon, I remember having one of those bullshit WrestleMania Greatest Match tapes when I was younger, and it had the Steiners against the Head Shrinkers from WrestleMania 9, so that's really my only memory of that show, well, besides the togas. I remember Scott also murdering Samu, I think, with a hot shot. How did that match make it onto the WrestleMania Greatest Matches tape?
I don't know.
Chris Levitt writes, my memories of WrestleMania 9 are that it had two of everything you don't ever want. Two doinks, two Hogan matches, two Luger angles, Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect, and there were three times people used medical aids as weapons, Luger, Doink, and Beefcake. In hindsight, Heenan on the camel and Hogan winning a match he wasn't even in are pretty funny. It was a horrible show, though. I think this was the beginning of the lean years, worst last match on a WrestleMania ever. And finally, Jake Cunningham. Hey, guys, great show as always this week. What did I say? Jay Cunningham writes, hey guys, great show as always this week. However, I really don't care for hearing about UFC. Could you please abstain from doing other UFC reviews? I'm sure a lot of the other listeners don't care for MMA. Anyway, keep up the great work. Can't wait to hear you slaughter WrestleMania 9. Remember, you can't spell slaughter without laughter.
Nice. And before we go, we have one more. I have a retraction from previous review of the UFC 2. Hoyce Gracie did, in fact, submit Minoki Ichihara with a choke and not an armbar. Remember, there's the call we were confused by because the announcers thought it was an armbar.
They had no idea what happened.
It was actually a gi choke.
Oh, okay.
And this information comes from my friend Carl from the Fight Club, who would like to remind you that in exchange for this information, that the Fight Club is putting on TFC 10 High Octane, coming to you live on pay-per-view Friday, March 19th from Edmonton, Alberta.
Yeah, Ryan Ford in the main.
Ryan Ford versus Tommy Spear from The Ultimate Fighter, TFC World Welterweight title, plus Victor Velimaki versus Martin Desilet for the TFC Light Heavyweight title. So
Martin Desilet.
Desilet. Desilet.
He's French.
I thought it was Desilet.
Martin Desilet.
Whatever. For more information, visit thefightclub.ca, and Jay Cunningham, I'm sure, will be lining up right at this moment.
Maybe he'll make the trek over to Alberta. All right, go check out TFC 19 High Octane as a plug sneaks its way here into Review Away.
Yeah.
So wait, we continue our reviews of WrestleMania, and I chose WrestleMania 9, so now it is in your court.
Okay.
To pick an event for next week.
All right. Well, would you like to do a good WrestleMania or a bad WrestleMania?
I do not care, Way.
Come on. Just pick. Okay, pick heads or tails.
Heads. You didn't even pick an event. You're just fucking going through your friggin' head right now what to review.
You know what? Let's do a good one. We'll, I'm sick of watching these bad ones. Let's continue from WrestleMania 9 and see what the next year had in store for the WWF. Let's do WrestleMania 10.
All right. WrestleMania 10 from Madison Square Garden is coming up next week. So keeping with the theme of WrestleMania 9 at Caesar's Palace, I thought we'd go out with Jerk It Out Way by the Caesars.
Watch me go. I'll be running circles around you. Jacket.